Perhaps I can start by asking you if you're a Benfleet person. Are you born and bred, or?
No. I am not far. I was born in Wembley, but moved to Chalkwell when I was four. Grew up in Chalkwell. And then left home, again, went to university, did a couple of things, and then joined the police force. First of all, I was stationed at Chelmsford Way, and then I lived in Rayleigh, and then I moved to Benfleet. Okay.
And that would be in sort of 19?
Well, moved to Lee first, and then I moved here. Moved here after I'd left the police, actually. I was in 1994, I moved here.
And did you have the interest in tropical plants?
Before then. That had been since the sort of mid-80s, really. Right. Sort of first time I had a little bit of a garden.
Right.
I lived in a flat which had half a garden, and we had an old house plant which was a Fatsia, and the Fatsia, back then they were sold as house plants, but even now you just consider it to be a hardy plant, but it wasn't doing very well, and I put it in the garden and it thrived, and it occurred to me, I'd always been interested in house plants, and it occurred to me that it might be quite fun to try and find other plants that were hardy but looked like house plants. And that slowly became an obsession.
You admit that, do you?
Really? Yeah. So, but I went off in a slightly different direction. I started off doing the same as all the other people who were doing this sort of exotic thing with big leaves of bananas and tree ferns and all that, and still do to an extent. But they've all very high water requirement, and here we are in the driest piece of England. It seemed madness, so I went on this quest to try and find plants that were hardy, equally exotic, but didn't need water. And then I started looking at yuccas and cacti and various succulent plants which have still got that wow factor and that sort of architectural form, but are totally drought proof. And there's very little actually been done about that. There's very little people, very few people have tried. So it's been a very interesting and at some times very expensive trial and error. Because you can do a lot of research about where a plant comes from and what the habitat is like when you know where the plant grows, and you try to source plants from areas that get frost or whatever, but sometimes the plants don't want to play ball.
No, different soil, but not,
yeah,
not
different.
Quite the same.
Do you know, rain at a different time of year or something like that? The bizarre thing in the garden. My first trip to Mexico was specifically to find a specific plant. It's one of these spiky things, an agave. In fact, there's one of them sitting right there.
Just that one there, yeah.
Yeah, just there. Comes from the northeast of Mexico, lives very high, so it's further away from the tropics than most of Mexico. It lives at 3,000 metres high in the mountains. And
fairly cold. Yeah.
So it's cold up in the mountains. It's a temperate pine forest up there. Lovely, lovely place. Routinely gets colder than it does here. Sometimes there's snow and there's ice. And I collected seeds of plants and grown plants. And last winter, nearly all of them died, and certainly through the country. And I can't understand why, because on paper, it's the best of its type to grow. Yeah, I have another one just over there, another agave plant that its natural habitat is from an awfully long way south in Mexico, right in the dry tropics, lowland area. Would never ever experience a frost ever. That population of plants ever would never have got a frost. And that's
sublime.
Yeah. So I'm sort of redefining my idea of hardy to be, if you plant it and it's still alive after winter, then it's hardy.
Yes.
As opposed to all the research and everything.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Something's going off. So when did you move here? Was that in 1994?
Yeah, moved here in 1994.
To this particular plot?
This plot, yeah, yes. Yeah. It was, my mother-in-law lived here. And she had lived here for some while. She was on her own, had been widowed early. And we assumed that she would want to spend the rest of her days here, really. But it was an old bungalow, and the bungalow, well, the garden was fairly wild. There was nothing much going on in the garden. I used to cut the grass and keep the worst of the weeds at bay, like the groundsman. But she was just a slave to the place. It was, if it was a nice day, she was out trying to do something in the garden. And if it wasn't a nice day, she was trying to fill the cracks in the house, because the bungalow was trying to make its way down to the bottom of the hill.
Oh, yeah.
And it was largely successful, but not all at the same speed. So these huge cracks all over the place. So, and anyway, one day she said, "I think I want to move, because in the winter I can't get out of the house and, you know, all this sort of thing." So, and we lived just up the road in Hadley, in on the flat, just opposite the bus station and Morrison's and Safeways as was. And so I came up with the daft scheme of swapping houses, which seemed like a reasonable idea. Started off an insurance claim for the subsidence.
Right.
And they put little pins in the cracks and measured for a while. And I think one corner of the house moved by an inch and a quarter over a year, and they said, "Ah, yes, you have got a problem." And anyway, the short version is that it was cheaper to rebuild than to repair, so that's what we did.
Yeah.
So I couldn't believe my good fortune, really, because I'd been eyeing up the garden, thought you could make a nice garden on this spot, but to then be able to sit down and effectively design my own house within the constraints of the fact that we didn't really have a lot of money, but
apart from that, yeah, it's an opportunity, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a lovely opportunity to be able to do the two together. So that's what we did. But it was about that time that, in fact, we were just about to sign on the dotted line when I'd been ill. I'd had an ME for a while, it was just at that time when the police force said, "See ya." And that's when I ended up not being a policeman anymore, and we just took on the big mortgage. So that was a bit of a trial for a while, but so that was that. We sat here. I planted a few things here and there, but largely we wanted to wait and find out what was going to go on with the house.
Yeah.
And that was eventually, we moved out for 6 months, and the house was built, and we moved back in 96. So really, I've been gardening here properly for like 15 years.
15 years, yeah. It's amazing how much you can achieve in a relatively short time, isn't it? 15 years is not.
Yeah, and I've sort of changed practically everything at least once in that time. So I've sort of done it twice, really. But I probably won't be changing it again. I think I've had enough. But I think the changes that I've made, the most recent changes, have been the most sweeping changes, and it sort of, it now links everything together. And I think it's a much more cohesive plan than it was to start with.
So. Is it labour intensive? I mean, would it be when you've completed?
No, not really.
Layout bits.
No. There's weeds, obviously. To one extent or another, a greater extent, really. The weeds are only plants that I've got here that seeding themselves elsewhere. So I'm not a great believer in manicuring a garden. I leave it to be slightly wild. And so, yeah, I leave the odd weed here and there, which is, and things just appear slightly more naturalistic if the plants have put themselves here and there. So I'm not too worried about some things and, you know, some weeds, but it's not too bad. That's the part of the gardening that my wife does more, is the weeding.
Oh, lucky her.
Yeah, I know.
It's the worst job.
We came to an arrangement that I'd cut the grass and she'd do the weeding.
Cut the grass, all right.
And the first thing that went was the lawn, so. But we've now got, it's quite unusual, I suppose, for an English garden to not have a lawn, especially with about a third of an acre, it's about 1,500 square metres. It's
not English at all.
No, not remotely. That's part of the idea, really. Yeah. You can wander out here and make believe that you're somewhere exotic. Keep out the English things and only plant un-English things.
You have both, what I would imagine, are sort of tropical plants, but also cacti. Yes. They seem to me to be two different things, you know. One requiring sort of hot and wet.
Yes.
And the other requiring dry.
Hot and dry.
And
yes.
I'm just kind of surprised that they go together.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you go to somewhere like Madeira or Tenerife or even anywhere, somewhere Mediterranean, where it's dry and they don't irrigate, they grow cacti and succulent plants. Mm. But where they irrigate the plants, then they can grow banana trees and bamboos and palms and all those sort of things. So there's this sort of dovetailing of the two together.
Mm.
What I've tried to do here is grade the planting so that the top open part of the garden is the dry succulent plants.
Right.
Largely look after themselves. I sort of water them in when they're new, but I don't normally water them too much.
Mm.
And then the bottom part of the garden,
it's more
of a jungle and gets more water.
Yeah.
But Greg, the new design has sort of taken over more of the dry stuff, just because that's become more than an obsession, perhaps. It's become very much an interest of mine to try and find which of these succulent plants can grow.
Mm.
It's one of the reasons I keep going over to Holland. They're very big growers of cacti and succulents over there. And they're a fraction of the prices that they are here.
Yes, you know about, one knows about the bulbs, obviously, of Holland. Right? I didn't realise they were into other types of
fanatical,
plants, particularly.
Fanatical. There's so many glasshouses that in all over the Netherlands, and there are, the space is very, very cheap to rent. It's a tenth of what it would cost in this country, and so there are little collectors all over the place who've got these vast spaces under glass where they grow these magnificent things. Saw a collection Friday. A fellow, he has got a collection of giant cacti that absolutely blows away the stuff at Kew.
Right.
The stuff at Kew is tatty and he's got pests and starved of light and not looked after properly and all those sort of things. And his plants are in absolutely immaculate condition. Never seen a collection like it. Absolutely superb.
Well, it sets a standard then, doesn't it, really?
There's a strange thing, because the water table there is high, the bigger plants send their roots down and hit the water table, so he doesn't really have to water them. The smaller plants, but the big cacti
can reach down.
They just sort themselves out, and how they don't rot in winter, I don't know, but obviously they don't. They're magnificent. Anyway. Yes.
Can I just repeat something I asked you earlier about losses during the last couple of winters. Can you tell me something about
those? They had quite a few losses. As the nature of an experimental garden with experimental planting is that with all the experiments you get results, and they might not be the results that you want, but you still get the results. and so I've learned a huge amount about which plants will survive and which plants won't survive. It's been quite expensive because of, and all, in terms of money, but time, because we, I think one of the problems with this style of gardening is that the last, up until 2 years ago, we'd been enjoying this run of ridiculously mild weather. Mm. Every winter for 12 years was milder than the average winter for the area. If you look at the weather data, you know, for the last 30 or more years, work out what the average cold temperature is. Mm. The last 10 years were all milder than average. And this global warming that we were promised has thought everybody was getting, everybody who does this sort of thing was getting carried away. I know I did. Mm. And so a little bit of complacency comes in and you start planting ridiculously tender plants because they've grown okay for the last 3 years, so I'll plant another one and then another one. And then
seems reasonable.
Wham! We go back to what was in effect, just for us it was just really a normal couple of winters. Mm. Horrendous compared to the previous 12, but historically they're just normal winters. Mm. And I lost quite a lot of plants, a lot of succulent plants, a lot of cacti, some palms. Mm. Last winter, more of a problem, as I said, was the snow, the amount of snow, sort of 50 centimetres of snow.
And weighing down?
Weighing down leaves is the physical damage that it caused. A lot of the palm trees, the leaves snapped under the weight of the snow.
And you lost two acacias?
Lost two big acacias. One of them, half of it collapsed under the weight of snow, but the cold killed it anyway. Mm. Since I've been gardening, that was here. That was certainly the coldest winter we've had. We had about -8. So. Right. But then I look on. It's nice and close now. I look on it and think, that's good because we've had a hard winter, and now the things that have survived.
And most things have.
Yeah, most things have. Yeah, there's a few gaps, and I still see the ghosts of the plants that are no longer here, but visitors I know don't know.
No, that's right.
And the things that are here I get more of. I know that they are good plants to grow, and I'll try more of that particular type. So with the cacti, I've got lots of different types of cacti, and some have died and some have done well, so I've got more of the type that have done well to see if they'll be as good as their brothers, you know. Mm. And so gradually you sort of form out of the frost, you get this picture starts to coalesce of what actually is going to be hardy and what isn't. Mm. And that's the joy of doing it, really, I think, for me.
And you try.